This is part two in a two-part episode of North Carolina Theater Stories. We are interviewing actor Nathan Pierce.
Stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me. Back
well, thank you for that discussion. Now, what's next for you?
What's next for me? Well, I'm doing Young Frankenstein at the Gilbert. I'm playing Inspector Kemp and the Hermit.
Oh, good.
So that should be a good time.
Well, it's good. And, you know, and for the audit, for those of you who can't wait to see it in September, it follows the movie. Okay. I was helping one actress with the lines, and I was just about exact because it's Mel Brooks. Why change it?
It's hysterical.
Yes, it's still hysterical.
Oh, yes.
And you add the music.
Yeah. Music somehow always makes it funnier.
Yes. So Frau Buchner, for example, I heard her song. I can't wait. Yeah. So what else?
I'm also going to be in It's a Wonderful Life at the Gilbert as well.
The second in the season.
Yes, playing Uncle Billy. Along with my lovely wife, Mary McGee, is playing my wife.
Wife.
Chili.
Yes.
Well, Mary, congratulations.
So that's going to be fun. And then another show I'm doing at the Gilbert is in the Rep Company, Titus Andronicus by William Shakespeare.
So you're 1, 2, 3 right there, I'm terrific. Now, I have to say this about It's a Wonderful Life. The first thing I said to Robin was, do they keep in the telephone scene for the movie?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh yes, because to me that is one of the five greatest moments of cinema in cinema history, that was minutes there, Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed. Mm-hmm. On the telephone, nobody's taking off their clothes, nobody is being suggested.
What? Right?
Well, you don't see what's happening below, like,
why am I doing this show?
Oh, you two cynics. Mary, I'm sure you're with me on this being shocked by these two guys.
I'm making a petition.
When I heard it was Gilbert Theater, I thought we didn't have to wear clothes.
Well, there's been a little bit of that. When we did the Blue Room, that's right.
Mary has a far dirtier sense of humor than her innocent,
well,
sweet.
Well, so many women are that way, but you can strike that from the tape. Now, so anyway, so that telephone scene, and we're really all very excited. We love the Christmas Carol, but that was 10 years, and it was time for a change, and we're going to have it. Well, now we're ready for your monologue. We've come to the monologue portion of our broadcast. And is it a monologue, or is it a sonnet?
It is a monologue.
And where's it from?
It's from one of my favorite shows that I did in college, actually. It's from I Hate Hamlet, and I had the honor of playing John Barrymore, who is known as the true American Hamlet.
Yes.
And so in this part of the show, the person he's trying to mentor to become the next American Hamlet, Andrew Rally, has basically said to him, you're nothing, you're washed up. Andrew has said this to John Barrymore.
Uh-huh.
And he basically throws everything that John Barrymore ever went through in his real life, his alcoholism and all that stuff, he throws it in his face. So this is more, it's a comedy, but this is more of a serious monologue. So, yes. And after a while, I even had trouble with those. There was a day on a set when the cameras rolled and I couldn't remember a line. Nothing. Take after take, not a word, not a speech, just haze and then terror. And I wasn't drunk, no, stone sober. And everyone was more than kind, and the words were scribbled on shirt sleeves and cardboards held just out of the camera range. But I knew instantly I could never go back on the stage. The hopeless, unemployable lush, the public embarrassment, the off-color joke. Yes, I ran to Hollywood, you're quite right, and you can't imagine the life I led. I was a movie star. Do you know what that means? My face 5 stories high and 6 zeros wide. Before all that, in my prime, I faced the dragon. I accepted a role so insanely complex, so fantastic and impossible, that any attempt is only that, an attempt. And I stood in the light, before a crowd fully prepared to dismiss, to deride, and to depart, and I shook them. I wooed them, and I said, yes, you will stay. And yes, you will remember. And for one moment in my life, I used all that I knew, every shred of talent, every ounce of gall. I was John Barrymore. And for those sacred evenings, there was no shame. I played Hamlet. Have you?
Oh, Nathan. Superb. Wonderful. Thank you for that. Have you read his autobiography? Not autobiography. Biography. Good Night, Sweet Prince.
I have not.
I think you would love it.
It was a fantastic show. Loved it.
Uh-huh. That was a just wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now, we're going to ask Mary to join us at the Gilbert Roundtable.
Yay.
And we're going to have our free-for-all.
Oh,
and
oh, goody.
And James is joining us, Nathan and me. And the topic tonight is forgetting lines, going up on lines. And so we're going to just, if anybody has a story, sometimes it's so painful we don't want to, we hardly want to remember them. But
I want to point out, ironically, Mary has a script.
She's scripted everything she's about to say.
Well, Mary, you are ready to talk about such a time. When was it and what was the play?
Oh, well, I have a bit of a vitamin deficiency, so I have memory troubles as it is. But no, I was trying to think of something where I forgot lines. I have three stories that aren't exactly that, but there was one show I was in, Box Step, at Methodist University. It was written by Linda Ward, and I had trouble getting my lines down. All week I was going crazy about that, and then we finally had the show, and it was just one performance, because I was alternating with Teresa Hammond.
Oh, yes.
On that. So I had one show, and every time it was my line, I thought, what's my line? And then it came out. What's my line? And then it came out. Every single line.
So delayed pause.
I forgot. Yeah, it was. Yeah, pregnant pause.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I worked it. I did. But I forgot every line, but I remembered it in time with pregnant pauses. But then, yeah, and then there was another show. Oh, it was at Seton Hall University, was A Piece of My Heart by Shirley Laureau. We were Vietnam nurses, and we had the flashback scene. And throughout the play, I said choppers and also helicopters. Now, when you're in a flashback scene, you're going crazy. I had trouble saying helicopters because I'd said choppers. So every show, it was like helichopters or helicopters. Like, it's hard to get it out. There was that. And then there was a missed entrance story, completely missed entrance story, where it was one line, it was only me. The whole scene was just me, and I missed it. Because, it was the play written by James Dean, Sherlock Holmes, the Sleeping Detective. Mm-hmm. It was my first show at the Gilbert.
I thought you were going to say he was handing you rewrites as you were about to go on.
Oh, right. Well, sort of. Yeah. Oh, but I was playing Annabelle. I was being held captive under hypnosis by Lionel Hitchcock, played by Evan Bridenstine. And there's a scene where I just run in, and I'm, no spoilers, but I had to deliver a line, and I was under hypnosis, and I was smart but stupid enough to get hypnotized, and I was like, I had to really work up to this line, and it was just an entrance, this line I had to go, and I had a bunch of time before this entrance, and I thought, good, because I really needed to prepare for this line, because it was just, I had to be posh, I had to be British, I had to be, like, all these things, and so I was really using my Strasbourg method for this. It really came in handy this time. And I was used to waiting a long time before this entrance. And I thought, I'll go to the restroom. And then Claudia Warga was playing Irene Adler. I knew that if Claudia wasn't in the green room, that that was my cue to start preparing. Claudia was still there. I'm like, why is she still there?
Well, that's a thin reason.
Why is she still there? And we got a text. Yay for texting technology. Because I almost missed my next entrance. Because we got a text from the booth telling someone backstage. Ralph. Ralph was backstage.
And folks, believe it or not, this was not dress rehearsal.
This was a performance.
This was a show. And good times. Luckily, Ralph let me know that they went on without my scene. I was prepared.
And it was brilliant.
Go. And yeah, and so, you know, it was a little less powerful.
Thank you, Mary. Great stories. Okay, and Nathan, you have a story.
I do have a story. It's... the reason behind dropping my line is actually the actual story of this. It was during I Hate Hamlet, and I did it at Southeastern University, which was the college I went to. And there's a sword fighting scene, and me and the guy playing Andrew Rowley, the student to John Barrymore's teacher, they sword fight. And we had gone over this before. We had done it two shows before, and we were like, you know, whatever, we got it. Well, we were sword fighting, and he was supposed to put his sword up, and I was supposed to swing my sword around so it hit his sword. Well, number one, we didn't make eye contact with each other, which is rule number one in stage combat. Make sure you're both ready. So I didn't do that, and so his sword wasn't up, so I swung my sword around and hit him on the corner of his... I didn't hit his eye, but it was like near his temple. So that was even scary too. Like, and it hit him, like, not crazy hard, but it hit him hard enough that he went down. And just that happening made me totally blank on my next line. So I was really close to actually saying, we need to stop the show. I think I killed him. But I didn't do that because I'm a professional. And if I had killed him, the show must go on. You know what I'm saying?
Damn right.
But I didn't. So what I said, actually, my next line literally was, Andrew, are you okay? I did not mean to harm you. That was the line.
And I'm so glad that you used the phraseology at the time.
Andrew, are you okay? I did not mean to harm you. That was literally the next line. And it finally popped into my head, and thank the Lord he was okay, because I thought I had hurt him really bad. But he stood up, and we ended the first act. Of course, right when we went off stage, it was like, I'm so sorry, please tell me you're okay.
Fortunately, not the end of your career.
No.
So, James, you have a story.
I'm blanking.
He's blanking.
He forgot his lines.
Now, my story can be long. I'm going to do it very quickly. I was in a one-man show called The Madness of Lady Bright. I played Leslie Bright, an aging gay man in New York, summertime, an apartment with no air conditioning.
Against type.
And he was gradually going insane. And it was a one-man show, except there were two characters dressed in black. And that were on stage, you know the play, and they moved furniture and did little things, but no lines, and so on. And I had a block on a line from practically day one in rehearsal, and it just almost became a joke. And so as the opening was drawing near, I said, I have to think of a mnemonic device to get me over that spot. Mm-hmm. Well, opening night, the house is packed. And I thought it was going well. And of course, by this time, you know, you're supposed to say that don't think about the line you don't know. You know, it's like the don't think about the elephant in the room. But I had that mnemonic device. Well, I got to that spot. I forgot the mnemonic device. And so began the longest time on stage. I mean, it is absolutely sheer terror because yep. you and I heard a crash. It was the director jumping up, charging, going backstage or something to see if she could do something, and people started glaring at the lighting person, and he went.
I'm told later.
Well, there weren't. There was a man, a young man, a young woman. These two characters on the stage with me, mm-hmm. dressed in black, and the boy started to move on to the next scene, and she grabbed his arm and pulled him back and would not let him save me.
She was the professional. Of the show.
That's not
you
the word.
Let him suffer.
That's not the word
that's
I
not the word you
put my head in mind.
No, of course not.
But five minutes later, 10, 12 minutes later, so it seemed, finally he just pulled his arm away from her and started the next scene, and we finished the play, standing ovation.
And needless, no one noticed that you forgot a line.
I think this time that's what usually is said.
Like, I didn't even notice.
Even
that 10-minute pause was brilliant. I thought that was in the script.
But James, you were in a play.
Just wondering. Yes. Do you remember what the line is now? Yeah.
No, I'd have to go through the script.
Okay. Okay.
But that would be awesome if he was like, "Yes, it's da 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 da."
But I really was too young. I was late 40s, and I should have been my age now to play this part. And I think I could probably do a better job. But anyway, James, I saw you at a play recently. You seem to be having a mental block
Didn't you say it was like every 5 minutes?
Yes, just every 5 minutes. I just stare. Well,
show?
That wonderful play called The Water Engine. And James, you were on stage at a table with the lead, a very fine professional actor.
Yeah. Professional actor.
And
real professional.
I was in the front row, and I was sending up vibes to you. I hope you caught them.
Yeah, that's sort of throwing me off. I was like, somebody's sending vibes to me.
Feel the vibes.
Anyway, James, I'm taking. You're still stealing.
Yeah,
story.
The water engine. There's a scene, and it's one of the first scenes in the show. And this was a Saturday show. We were, you know, having an unusually good show. The audience was kind of lively. Because this is a really deep show, and I think typically hard for the audience to follow along. But they were seemingly really into it, and I derailed that. I blanked on my line, we're scientists are still looking over the evidence to find out whose fault it was, because I refused to take complete blame, but it was my fault.
But I was in the audience, and I really enjoy it. We joke about this, but no one seemed to notice. They're so used to
everybody knows. there was this long pause, I look over to Greg, who's, sharing the scene with me, and I'm kind of hoping he's going to save me. He's got to say something. And he says nothing. He just looks at me with a panicked look in his eyes. And so I'm thinking, well, that might be a giveaway. We're both staring at each other with expressions of panic.
You were letting the audience do the work.
Exactly.
Right. So
you didn't have to say anything.
Yeah, I began writing the thing on my desk, grab my phone, like any calls.
Well, we've all had that, and it's absolute time of terror for actors.
Yes.
It does happen. In some cases, people never step on stage again. So I think the thing to do right now is to appeal to St. Genesius.
Yes.
Weekly, we turn to him for guidance. And this time it's having to do with losing lines. Dear St. Genesius, loving patron of the theater and its people, please advise your flock about what to do when you are on stage and a line is just not there. Do you agree with me when I advise blocked actors to start staring in an anxious way at another actor?
Never happened before.
I don't know why.
I swear.
I don't know why I'm like, this is not, this is very serious. This blame transfer is most effective and gives you time
Yes.
To try to remember which act you're in, mm-hmm. or, for that matter, which play. Mm-hmm. Yep. If all else fails, glance at your timepiece, announce you have an urgent appointment at the asylum, and, and quickly leave the stage.
Yes.
The other astonished actors will manage somehow.
Yeah.
We eagerly await your guidance on this matter. Now, I really apologize to our audience, our wonderful radio audience for laughing. It was covering tears.
It was tears of, you know, you're laughing because you're hopeful that the prayer will be answered.
Well, thank you for that. That was
great.
Angels were tickling.
Now it's time for our quiz.
Oh, goody, goody.
And most of guests are beginning to perspire a bit at this moment. But I know that you are starting your own podcast about film, movies. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a well-known movie cast, well-known characters, and the date.
Okay.
And you are to give me the title of the film.
Oh,
now,
boy.
If you, I'm not, there are 12 and 12 of these questions, and if you're successful with a certain number, we never tell our guests exactly how many. It's too nerve-wracking for guests to know that figure.
Okay.
But if you're successful and you're getting this wonderful book called The Camera Smart Actor, this book should be required reading by all those who aspire to film and television acting careers. And so, who knows where your career might take you. This book is yours.
All I know is I want that book.
Well, you want it. But you have to earn it. And so, James, if it's at all possible to keep score, and I'm giving you a pencil.
I don't think he's going to get any of these, so his pencil's not going to be easy.
Thanks for your boost of confidence, jerk.
Sorry, buddy.
Well,
can I get the book?
Nope.
Mary, bless your heart, no.
No.
You might get the first two.
So, James, you have figured it out by this time. You do 1, 2, 3, 4 slash, like Mary. That. I've had to explain this so many times, those tally marks. Number one, I'm giving the cast
and the date.
You give the title. Okay. Leonardo DiCaprio, Kate Winslet, 1997.
Titanic.
The Titanic. Very good. Number two, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Alec Guinness, Peter Cushing, 1977.
Do I have to be specific which one this is?
Well, the generic one.
Star Wars.
Very good. Very good. You have two. You're heading toward this wonderful camera smart prize. Sean Connery, Ursula Andress, Joseph Wiseman, 1962. Think of a series, a long-standing
series. James Bond?
But which one?
If I could choose a generic Star Wars.
There have been 25.
With Love.
No, it's the first one.
It's the first one, yeah, of course.
Which is?
It's Sean Connery and friends. Martinis should be shaken.
No. Doctor No.
Doctor No.
Doctor No.
I finished you before you could say it.
So well, okay, we'll give it to you. We can't. You have to be certain standards on this.
Yeah, there's got to be standards.
I'm afraid you're not getting it. The book might be slipping from your grasp, but who knows? Number four, Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis, 1959.
Oh. I do know the name. I know it because they both dress up as women.
Right.
Gentlemen Before Blondes.
No.
No. Panic. Fever. There's the word fever in it.
We'll come back to this.
We'll
come back to it.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, number five. We'll come back. Janet Leigh, Anthony Perkins, 1960.
Psycho.
Very good.
Did you not think I would know that?
Psycho.
I knew earlier. He said he didn't think I was going to know.
Number six. Catherine Ross, Robert Redford, Paul Newman, 1969.
Oh, my gosh. Does he play pool in it?
I think not. No, of course not.
That makes sense.
That was a Hustler.
Yeah, that's not.
This is Western.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a Western.
Western. And I'll come back to this.
The Shuffler.
Okay, number 7, Audrey Hepburn, George Pippard. You should be concentrating.
I am. Audrey Hepburn, George something.
George Pippard, 1961.
Quiet. James? It's not Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
It is Breakfast.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I don't think that should count if he says it's not that.
but it was, so it is.
Number 8, Charlton Heston, Roddy McDowall, 1968.
Planet of the Apes.
Very good. Planet of the Apes. Number 9, Francis McDormand, William H. Macy, Steve Buscemi.
Buscemi,
1996.
Can I get half of this because I said his last name right?
You didn't say it right.
Buscemi.
It's Buscemi.
Whatever. Buscemi. Yeah, Buscemi.
Thank you. Thank you. Very much.
I'm going to probably say Fargo.
Fargo. Very good. Number 10, Spencer Tracy, Sidney Poitier, Catherine Hepburn, 1967.
I think CFRT is doing this. Guess who's coming to dinner?
It's on their list up there in the marquee. Yes. Guess who's coming to dinner? Number 11, Greg Kinnear, Tony Collette, Steve Carell, Alan Arkin, 2006.
Little Miss Sunshine.
Little Miss Sunshine. Wow, you're cooking.
Yes!
Number 12, Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, George Segal, 1966.
Who's the second one?
Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor.
Is it Cleopatra?
No,
it's not.
George Segal, 1966. Cleopatra was 6 years earlier. She was an English author.
Sorry, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at the fact that I don't know.
Who's Afraid of Virginia
Woolf? Yes, I knew that. It's
okay,
a good book.
Now let's go back to...
Let's go back.
To Marilyn Monroe, Jack Lemmon, Tony Curtis.
Some Like It Hot.
Some very good. Some Like It Hot. And okay, if you get this one right, the book is yours.
Okay.
Catherine Ross, Robert Redford, Paul Newman.
Oh my gosh. Oh. Butch Cassidy.
And
the Sundance Kid. Ah! Can I just say thank you to my sisters for making me watch classic movies when I was younger.
Apparently, Lynn assumed the 60s was your era.
And apparently, he was correct, sir.
Well, he had...
Hold on. That's one,
he's,
two,
James is,
three.
He's a calculator.
I got
one,
almost...
Two,
I think...
Three, four, five, six, seven,
eight, nine,
ten.
Ten. Unfortunately, you had to have 11.
No, you didn't. What? That's ridiculous.
No, you're right.
It yay! I get to learn to act for the camera. Smartly. I'm right. So proud of myself right now.
Now
I'm done. Bye.
No, you're not. It's a longing show.
Winners get to leave.
Some of our listening audience may have fallen off, but we're hoping that a lot of people have stuck with it.
They have not fallen off.
And with our wonderful, entertaining guest. I'm starting something new this week, James and Mary. It's Quote of the Week.
Mm.
I'm going to give this a quote. Then if we very briefly want to say something about it, giving the hour of your approach to midnight.
Sorry.
And here it is. No, it wasn't. This is what this wonderful Redfield, this wonderful American actor, I believe his first name is Robert Redfield, a Shakespearean actor, said, acting requires hard work and emotional nudity.
Mm.
What does that mean? To me, it means, you know, to nudity, we frequently, you need to take off your clothes, and maybe you're not too proud of this or that, and you want to try to cover yourself, and you're being covert, you're hiding. But emotion, so that's with physical nudity, but emotional nudity, what would that be?
I think it's the opposite. I think it's putting all your emotions out there and not basically having a thick skin, you know. You put everything out and for everyone to see.
And to draw from it from what you need.
Exactly.
Yeah, very good.
And next.
So I like this very much. Any superstitions, Nathan, James, Mary, I came up with a new one. Did you know that in certain circles, Thursdays are considered dangerous and treacherous in theater? A rehearsal, Thursday rehearsal, Thursday performance, Thursdays. Mm. So now I planted that seed To you, very busy actor.
It's usually like the final dress rehearsal.
I'm sorry.
Jerk. Right, I'm going to be nervous.
All right, now we've come to our section on book sharing.
Yes.
And I see you have a much loved...
Apparently this is the third time someone's brought this book.
Correct, but I'm glad you did.
Yes.
You can say something new about...
True and False by Heresy and Common Sense for the Actor by David Mamet. Now, I've heard like a lot of actors say this is a very controversial book, and I believe they say that because basically David Mamet says, the preparation you do as an actor is useless, and all the theater education you've ever gotten is basically useless as well. Now, I say that in a very negative way, but I actually liked this book because I kind of agreed with him to a certain extent, because my personal opinion is one of the surefire ways you learn theater is by doing it. Is by experiencing it. And I think that's what David Mamet is saying to a certain extent. Now, obviously, he's a playwright, so he's like, the actor's job is to just say the lines on the page,
yes.
Do what the playwright says, basically. But also, I got from this, because I'm kind of in a point in my life where I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do with my life as a 28-year-old still living with his parents. I got from this book that it's okay to do what you love and not expect payment, because I love performing. I've done it for free, and I would do it for free because that's what I love to do. I love making people laugh. And if I'm doing a drama, if I can make people cry, awesome. I just love performing, and so from this book, I got that it's okay not to necessarily pursue an acting career, to just be content where you are with performing in general.
So, well, what a wonderful place to be. You're very mature for arriving there so young.
Yes.
And very, very briefly, the second book is...
I just started a second book. I'm actually part of a book club for actors. It's called the Actors Cohort of Central Florida. It is in Florida, but you can join it on Facebook. There's a Facebook group for it. They have like a book club meeting, and you can join via social media, whether it be on YouTube or Google Hangout or whatever. That's my little plug for that. Our next book that we're reading is The Creative Habit by Twyla Tharp. I think I've read it briefly before, but I've already started reading it, and it's basically the exact opposite of David Mamet's book. So it's interesting to see different aspects of what people feel theater needs to be or can be. So.
Yes. Pick and choose, and always learning, always experimenting. What good for you. Thank you for that, for those shares. Nathan. Well, time for mailbox. And we've gotten a number of letters this week. People were so thrilled with our recent guests, Robin Parrish, the artistic director that Nathan's been working so hard with at the Gilbert. And our wonderful magician who was here the week before, Dale Kalneski. In fact, I think there's one letter here that I have not opened. And to give you some idea of how our podcast, James, is making some waves. We're people are knowing about it. How else would this letter be addressed like this? Lynn's podcast, Haymon Hill, Fayetteville. And it got to me.
Wow.
So I think
put a mattress on.
Well, I think this is some kind of, so let me see what this is what this says, right?
Okay.
I haven't had time to open it. This is for Dale, the magician. Does the magician judge wet t-shirt competitions?
Well,
it's such a nice card.
Now, just this is this.
You know, this, yeah, the card is very misleading. Little girl with
well,
red riding hood.
No, I find this. No, what I find it very disheartening. I tended to think the quality of our listenership.
Hey, it means that you're reaching a broad audience.
Well,
who love wet t-shirts.
Well, thank you for that. I'm finding
the young kids are.
I'm finding it hard to take that positive approach. But now, don't head for the front door. I'm reaching for the stopwatch.
But wait, there's more.
Perhaps they recognized him from one of these contests. They were curious because.
Well,
he seems like such a nice guy.
Well, he's a very nice guy, but I don't know. I
known for their wet t-shirt.
Well,
We digress.
Well, we do digress, but I have reached for the stopwatch, mm-hmm. Nathan,
yes.
And you have 60 seconds to tell how you would change the world of theater in Cumberland County.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes. Now, I'm going to go completely against David Mamet, and I would say I think it's important to teach kids the art of theater, arts in general, I think. And I think that's a big thing that a lot of people would agree with, that the arts are very important. That's why I helped out with the Gilbert Theater's summer camp, and I did an improv workshop with them. And I'm actually hopefully going to be doing more theater teaching in the near future. Because I know that when I was in high school, and even when I was in college, and even I think I did some shows in elementary school too, just being a part of theater shows you how you work as a team. You learn how to memorize pretty quick. In some people's cases, they didn't learn that, James. But I think theater education would be the biggest thing, really emphasizing that more. I think the Gilbert Theater does a great job with their educational program. Speaking Shakespeare tries to reach out with educational packets and going into the classrooms and handing the teachers these materials that they can use. I know Cape Fear Regional Theater also does a theater program. Temple Theater in Sanford does that. I'm also nicely plugging all these theater companies because they're amazing. They all do a great job at reaching kids with the education of theater. And so I probably have a little bit more time left, but I'm going to stop it probably right there because that's basically
what I think. Stop right there. Well, 62 seconds.
Oh, so I was over by two.
Well, I couldn't agree with any of all of that more than I couldn't say it better myself. Now, birthdays. We have some celebrated birthdays this week. Edna Ferber, Showboat, that was wonderful Broadway shows from the 20s, born on this day in 1897, that should be. I have 1987. 1887.
People listening didn't know that until you just said
that. thank you for it. Dame Wendy Hiller, wonderful English actress, born this day in 1912. Any other birthdays we know about, Mary?
My mom's birthday was yesterday.
Oh.
And that wonderful theater person.
Let's tie it to theater. Without her mother, Mary would not be here. Mary is a very distinguished actress here in Fayetteville. So, there you go.
So, and her mother deserves credit. Thank you for that. She certainly does.
Yes.
Anybody else? All right. Now, call board. Did you know, Nathan, that Chris Dofsios is opening on Broadway?
Really?
In Bed with Roy Cohn at the Lion Theater. It opens on the 25th.
Well, good for him.
And runs through October 3rd.
I acted with that guy.
And so, to remind our audience that Chris was Stanley in Streetcar. And it was so fine. And
good job, Chris.
Speaking of snapping fingers, I wish we could all be up there and see him opening night. Anything else?
Well, I just did want to point out that tomorrow is Fayetteville's own Rhonda Brocky's birthday.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she's having her birthday on the 19th. So that's not really tomorrow when you're listening to this, so...
But
yeah.
Anyways, on the 19th.
Right.
It's a day.
And Rhonda, you know, she's a terrific actress and director. She's in a lot of the Gilbert and the CFRT.
And Young Frankenstein coming up.
Young Frankenstein coming up. But as for upcoming shows, I don't know of any right now.
Now, I'm starting something else new. This is a challenge for our listeners. I'm going to ask a question. I really have two questions per show, don't I? I'm asking a second one. This one is more lighthearted. But anyone who can... How can they... If somebody has the answer to this, James, how do they get us... enter the contest?
Well, they can probably... I think we have an email up on the website, www.nctheaterstories.com. That's theater spelled with an E-R, not an R-E. Just go to the contact page and send us a message through there.
Good. All right. So, here is the question. Who is George Spelvin? Who is George Spelvin?
Father of Tori Spelvin.
If you know who that is, then there's a prize. A wonderful, wonderful prize.
There's a prize for listening to this for an hour and 17 minutes.
Now, I want to thank our guest, Nathan, for being so delightful this evening.
Thank you for having me, Lynn.
And this is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company. But now we always have a P.S., a pod script.
Okay.
Where I ask this question of you, Nathan, and it is, what is the universal question?
Huh. I have no idea, Lynn.
Well, I do know what the answer is, but one of these days I'm going to, it could be some months from now, years from now, we're still doing this broadcast, James. You are old and gray, and I'm still looking 39.
You've sucked my youth.
My Dorian Gray portrait is ensconced in the attic. But I shall reveal the answer to this very, very important question. And I make light of it, but it isn't. It's going to change the world.
I can't wait.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all